This is a throwback to the Wonder Woman TV show from the 1970s. I actually really dig this tune, but it still makes a very clear point in its own way that Wonder Woman was ready for an update. And as you probably know, she got one. Hey, can we stop playing that old music now? Thanks. Thank you. Okay. Here's a little taste of what it sounds like when Wonder Woman kicks butt in 2017.
Stay here. I'll go ahead.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're talking about Wonder Woman and what she means to you. Call 816-235-2888 with your story. Loewy Lockerbie is a pop culture critic for us here at Central Standard. Hi, Loewy.
Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about Wonder Woman's backstory for the uninitiated in the language of nerd.
Well, she has a very interesting backstory in the language of nerd. William Marston, the guy who created her, was a psychologist who was he was an early developer of a lie detector test, which is where that whole lasso of truth thing comes from.
Which our listeners may or may not already know about.
She, wraps it around somebody and they have to tell the truth. And in the movie, it causes great pain if they attempt to lie. So that was a big part of the storyline and something that he was very interested in. He was an early supporter of feminism, including the suffrage movement. His wife was also an academic, and they were in a polyamorous relationship with another woman and had four kids between the two women. And she was also, very, very smart, very well educated, and had her own career aspirations as well. So he was very much an interesting fellow. And he was one of those people who was fairly convinced that women were superior to men, not just equal. And so this idea of this Amazon woman coming in and saving the day, Wonder Woman remains really the only major on her own independent female superhero.
As in not just...
There's female Batman version of a male woman. It's not Batgirl or She-Hulk,
right?
She very much stands on her own. And, as much as it still plays to the limitations of, the way we see gender in our society and in pop culture, it's about as feminist as anything you're ever going to see in the comic book world, especially in the sort of classic comic book world of the 40s.
And so this idea of an Amazon woman, can you explain that piece of it?
In the comics, and I'm not as well-versed in the comics as a lot of people are, but, they're always changing the backstories and things like that. In the movie, it's very muddled. I don't know if it went through rewrites or re-edits, but the idea being that Zeus created these women to prevent men from destroying everything, basically, and it didn't quite work. So they're on this island where they're protected. They have a force field around it, but they're preparing for this battle against Ares, the god of war, that's supposedly coming someday, although they've been there for who knows how long, and it hasn't happened yet. But when Diana, aka Wonder Woman, decides that it's time to go during World War I, Then she goes out and interestingly, I find this interesting, she's there to stop violence rather than perpetrate it. I mean, her purpose is to try to stop the war when she fights, it's basically
in this case World
position.
War One, right?
Yeah, World War One. Which is interesting. You don't see a lot of period piece comic book movies.
It's true.
Captain America, that's about it.
What is your personal relationship to Wonder Woman?
Well, growing up, I was a kid in the 70s, so the TV show was a big part of my life. And she was also a character on the Justice League cartoons. The real classics was Gleek the Monkey and the Wonder Twins. But, the 70s were kind of an interesting time to be a girl because we were starting to see female characters in pop culture who were, really getting out there and kicking some butt. And she was part of that pantheon, as it were.
Who else was in the pantheon?
Oh, well, Princess Leia, we've had that conversation a few times before. And oddly enough, you know, like The Bionic Woman, you know, that show was very popular. And even Charlie's Angels, as much TNA as it had, what I remember about it was that opening credit sequence where they talk about how well they did at the police academy and they got stuck doing clerical jobs until they got hired to be, you know, private detectives.
You're just bringing to mind another movie from that era, 9 to 5.
Yeah, it's a little bit later, but yeah, absolutely. And you know, you see these three women just take on their sexist boss. And, you know, it was an interesting time. But the Wonder Woman TV show and cartoon and everything was kind of wrapped up in that a little bit.
Well, I'm curious from your perspective whether it was exciting to you in a way you maybe hadn't expected to see Wonder Woman reimagined for the big screen this way.
Well, as a film critic, I had some trepidation because the DC film series that they've been working on has not been done as well as, say, Marvel's film series. But, you know, there was hope when they hired Patty Jenkins, who's, you know...
The director.
To get a female director, first of all, was a... Yeah, good. Thank you. And it's not Zack Snyder, who I think is really a pretty terrible director and who's done most of the DC stuff up to this point. And, you know, it was one of those things of, you know, I want to get out and support this and I want to see how it is. And if it's good, I want to support it. And it turned out to be pretty good, actually. Very entertaining. And, you know, as origin stories go, it moved a little better than most. And there was a lot to recommend it, I thought. And I love seeing how successful it is. There was a little girl at the preview screening, about 9, 10 years old or something, in a Wonder Woman costume. And that did my heart good, you know. And Comic-Con's going to have a lot of Wonder Women this year, I have a feeling.
Well, let's hear from our other guests. We've got Aisha Hardison with us from a women's studies department at KU and Viviana Grieco with us from the history department at UMKC. Hi, Aisha.
Good morning.
And hello, Viviana.
How are you?
Good. So how surprising is it to the two of you, and I'll talk to both of you about this, that in 2017, more than a decade into this now predictable trend of new superhero blockbuster movies being released every summer, this is the first one with a woman in that title role?
Oh, I was very excited about that. I have been enjoying other comic book films like the Marvel franchise, but I had really forgotten that there hadn't been one that really featured a woman hero. And so I was surprised at how excited I was about the film. I don't come with a background or particular, you know, memories of Wonder Woman from childhood, but I was really excited to see the film.
What excited you about it? I mean, when you're there in the theater?
Oh, well, I think the build up to it and just to see how it was going to be done. And I think particularly in this, you know, cultural moment where, you know, earlier this year, there's a women's march and the kind of conversations that are happening about women and women in politics and women's social role and potential influence and power. I thought it was nice for this film to come out this year at this time.
Viviana, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I have to say I went to the movie, to watch the movie with my daughter. She's 12 years old, and she was the one who wanted to watch the movie precisely because she's been more immersed in this idea that, you know, not all the movies that you want to watch at 12 have to be either cartoon-based or if you want Disney movies, right? And she was the one who invited me to watch the movie. And I was a little bit skeptical about what I would see in the movie because I'd never been very drawn into the superhero genre. I do have recollections of Wonder Woman in my childhood. I mean, growing up in Argentina, she was a big success. We used to play Wonder Woman. And I was a little bit disappointed. I was not necessarily excited, but I was a little bit disappointed.
Really?
Because, yeah, well, I was expecting not such a, you know, you cannot take away the idea that she is a driving force in the movie. And, you know, you have a woman-centered movie. You do have a female superhero, which is, you know, it's important and it's a contribution, but at the same time I was a little bit disappointed by the strength on physical force as the driving force, not necessarily, you know, spiritual strength or intellect, right? And so I was a little bit disappointed by that.
Interesting. I guess, I mean, we'll have to get into more of the scenes in a little bit of depth later, but it seems to me that her philosophy, at least, is kind of a driving force in that she won't tolerate suffering. And she won't be told, we have to be strategic, we have to wait and be pragmatic. She will stop and address suffering immediately and whether people deserve it or not, which I think is a philosophy that guides her.
True. But, you know, the interventions are primarily by physical force. Right. So I see that. But, you know, her interventions are all physical. Right.
And so you prefer her to use cunning.
Well, more dialogue.
That doesn't make for very exciting movie. I mean, that just from a filmmaking perspective, you know, nobody would watch that.
But it's a superhero movie. I get it.
And she's a superhero. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's always how she's operated.
I get it. But it's. I was expecting more nuance, perhaps.
It's interesting because I think the question you're kind of asking is, do we want her to participate in the genre in all of its, I don't know, all of the expectations around it, which is an expectation for violence and like big fight scenes and domination and loud noise and kicking and grunting and all of that. Do we want our woman superhero to do all of this same stuff, even if we don't like that stuff, because that's what would make her also like part of this pantheon? Or do we want her to be different?
Well, but she's a full-time superhero in the movie, whereas, you know, in the show, she was not a full-time superhero, right? She had downtime from that job, right? And so I get it. It's a superhero movie, but again, a little bit of nuance would have helped for me as a viewer.
Viviana, it might also help me to understand your personal history with the show, because this character, like you were saying, you played Wonder Woman when you were a child, that you grew up in Argentina.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear more about the show and what it meant to you.
Well, I mean, the show was a success, you know, and it brought up, you know, the whole woman-centered superhero. That was great. And what I remember about playing Wonder Woman, you know, I went to an all-girls school, and you have to wear uniforms, right? And the code was very strict. You have to have your hair tied up in a ponytail or braided. And the uniform had a belt, and, you know, the skirt had to be on the knee or below the knee, right? And so when we were playing Wonder Woman, we were allowed to spin around. Our skirts got risen because you were spinning around. Then you took all off the hair ties, and you ended up with your hair loose, right? And then you used your belt as your lasso. So, you know, basically you shed yourself of all the constraints of the uniform, and, you know, teachers were not able to say a word about what you were doing because you were playing Wonder Woman, right? So it gave us a path to free ourselves from the uniform, which was quite constraining, believe me. It was, I mean, I see girls in uniforms these days, and they're not as strict as ours. So, you know, I remember that part. And then in an all-girls school, there was no, you know, we were all divided between good and evils, right?
Yeah, you and, were all the good guys.
Yeah,
and all
we were
the guys.
Yeah, we were all good and bad. But, you know, when it was your turn to be Wonder Woman, you know, you could just, you know, take off the constraints from the uniform, right? So that was fun. So I remember that part, and, you know, I can give her that. Thank you, Wonder Woman, for that. And, I think that's the main. And another thing that I noticed in, you know, and I have that image of Wonder Woman on my mind, right? If you look at the two, you know, the show and the movie, there's more I mean, the physical representation of Wonder Woman, I mean, this one, the 2017 version, is very muscular. She's kidding for a millennial type of physical attraction. she has no cleavage. Her bodice doesn't show a cleavage, where the one in the 1970s does show a big cleavage, right? It's a different type of sexual power that you're trying to project. So in many ways, I kind of like the 2017 one, the one that doesn't show that much cleavage for, you know, an image. And you can show strength without and be powerful without showing a cleavage. I mean, like, so I like that from the new version.
It's really fascinating to me, given your history with it, that the uniform is a big part of, because yeah. superheroes have their uniforms, and Wonder Woman, even at a certain moment, she's got to do something. I mean, this is a crucial moment in the film where she's going from, okay, like, we're going to get to where I'm going to take on the problem I want to solve. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. And then she realizes, I'm there. I'm fighting now. She's got to stop and put on her headband.
Yes.
Well, even prior to that, she has to go shopping.
Right.
Like, she yeah. has to be acculturated into London or British society, or even proper dress for women. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And she's still beautiful, right? Mm. So that has to be kind of restrained in some way. So it's really interesting, given playing Wonder Woman would allow you to shed your uniform, but there's a moment in which Diana has to put on her uniform that other women are wearing in London society.
Aisha, is there something in your mind that is different about the nature of power, the nature of this character's power, that you think has to do with how we imagine feminine power in particular?
Yeah, I think in some ways the film is challenging kind of traditional notions of how we think about female power. So it isn't rooted in her sexuality or voluptuous body per se. And I do think there is something important about seeing her physical strength, and maybe more so than her physical strength, seeing her as a warrior, that she is a fighter, and she's very principled about that. But I think the film also allows for us to think about women's social influence. So there are moments in which, I mean, she's basically supposed to be a secretary, right? I mean, that's her cover. But she resists being shut out of the room, out of the meeting. She resists having her voice silenced.
She appears when she's distinctly been told very clearly not to.
Not to talk, right?
Yeah. Or come in here with me. Don't.
Exactly. You know. She resists allowing the men to exclude her from the action, and she resists being a damsel. So I think in those ways, on one hand, it is about physical strength, and I think it's important to see women in that role too. And I think the Amazons, their strategy, they're warriors, they've been in war and freed themselves from enslavement from men. But on the other hand, I think it's really interesting to see her social influence, or the potential social influence that she has too.
Let's talk about what motivates her. She is motivated by a desire for peace, and by really a visceral reaction to seeing the devastating effects of war, which to me in some ways casts her in that historic nurse's role on the front, but in some ways not.
Yeah, I think the idea of kind of her emotionalism and maybe even naivete initially about what war means is kind of more associated with the feminine, or with women who don't participate in war or battle. But she is a woman that does. And so part of her character arc is to grow in that way. And one of the interesting things about her, she is engaging these questions about what does bravery look like? What does honor look like? Particularly in comparison to the men that she's surrounded by, and that she inspires them to act. But that through her kind of growth, she's
also... Because they like to plan.
Yeah. Yeah, they like to plan, but also they are not honorable men. They are thieves and murderers, etc. They are not men who confront their enemy face to face, right? And so she's asking all these questions about, or her journey allows us to question what does war look like. And so she kind of engages that. She inspires them to act in a moment of no man's land, where, you know, only a woman is brave enough to cross it.
Her sidekick is a dude. He's a spy. Mm-hmm. And he reminds her many times throughout the movie that he is above average. She comes from this other place where she keeps asking him, like, are you typical of the average man? And he, as this spy, keeps defending, you know, you know, where I come from, I'm actually kind of above average. Right. But, you know, their relationship is interesting. First of all, that she's from this other place, so that immediately casts him in this position of explaining things to her a lot. Mm-hmm. But also just, you know, like that she has that they meet by her saving his life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she saves his life more than once. And I think that his reiteration that he's above average is, you know, one part humans and sexual innuendo. But on the other part really speaks to the complexity of humanity, right, or of mankind. And she's coming from the perspective that men are unnecessary, right? They're unnecessary for war and they're unnecessary for sexual pleasure. And that she's very independent and sufficient in and of herself. But there is an aspect of his character that enlightens her about the realities of the world, which she has been sheltered from growing up, where she comes from.
So, well, after she saves this guy, Steve, from drowning, he's taken before her people, before the Amazons, and questioned. So there's this group of women demanding to know where this man has come from, whether he might pose some kind of danger. They've tied him up. He's in that lasso of truth, and they keep asking him questions. The rope is glowing.
My, name is Captain Steve Trevor, pilot, American Expeditionary Forces, serial number 8141921. That's all I'm at liberty to... Assigned to British intelligence. What the hell is this thing?
The lasso of Hestia compels you to reveal the truth.
But it's really hot.
What is your mission?
Whoever you are. You are in more danger than you think.
What is your mission?
I am a spy! I'm a spy.
So that's different. I mean, for a man to be kind of in front of a group of women who are calmly and confidently demanding the truth, and that he's unable to protect his secrets.
Mm-hmm. And also has been characterized as a liar throughout the film, too. I mean, she has to use the lasso of truth more than once on him to figure out if there's artifice about him or deception or duplicity. And I think there are ways, thinking about the philosophy of war, et cetera, but also kind of men and women and what men represent in the film and what women represent. And women seem to be the potential source of peace, but also of love and honesty and principles and values.
What do you think about that just from a, like, gender studies kind of perspective? I mean, what do you think it says about this moment in our society that's part of what a woman who's a superhero can do? She can get the truth from a man.
Oh.
It's interesting
to me. Particularly in our moment of when we're questioning truth and facts and what's fake and what are lies, it adds another depth to that conversation occurring in the film. And I think there is some way in which we think about who creates history and what actions and events create history. And often women are left out of that and are often not seen as actors. It adds some value to what women do bring to the table or can bring to the table, or some women, because obviously there's a lot of diversity in that. And I think that might speak to the complexity, maybe. I mean, in some instances, I think it very much stands within our traditional notions of how we think about women as complements to men or to masculine world, etc. But I think the film is attempting, at least, to present women as being physically strong, engaging in conflict, but also bringing these other elements. So I think it's important for her to be a part of the superhero conventions, but I think she's also bringing something a little bit more. She's not conflicted about being a hero at all. And I think that's something very different about her.
We're going to get into some of the details in a moment, but there's something, you know, I saw so much commentary on gender, so much really subtle and interesting commentary on gender, as well as some not so subtle commentary on gender, too. A couple of little one-liners that seemed maybe just thrown in there for an easy laugh. But at the same time, what I found really inspiring about this hero was, I think, I mean, I'm a woman, so I can't necessarily say what I'm responding to as a person versus as a woman because they're the same thing to me. But I really don't think it entirely has to do with gender. Just that she is a character who is overwhelmed by the extent of suffering in the world. And I think a lot of human beings today can relate to that. You pick up a newspaper and you read story after story about some place near, some place far, where people are going through something that is just unimaginable. And you feel overwhelmed and you feel like there's nothing I can do about this. And her character is so cathartic because she can do something about it. She feels that feeling and she just stops and she fixes it. Mm-hmm. And she kicks butt while she's doing it. And we can debate whether that the fight aspect of it. But do you think that what she represents is specifically feminine, or do you think that what she represents is just a great hero?
I think in this genre, what she represents is specifically feminine. I think in general, a great hero should or would have aspects of empathy, would respond to suffering, etc. But I think the way these things are structured in Hollywood films in particular, I don't think I can generalize, but I feel like a lot of male heroes are conflicted about whether they want to intervene or not, or the burden of what it means to be a hero, or that they're dealing with personal tragedy, and that's why they get involved. That's what their vigilantism is about. And she doesn't have that. She's not coming from trauma. She's not personally motivated. Even though she's a goddess, and maybe that assumes some type of responsibility, it's really a responsibility that she does in response to suffering. And part of her journey is actually learning what war is, and that it's complicated, and it's not external forces, but people always making decisions, and there's conflicts in everyone and what they're dealing with. And so I think that is really feminine in this genre of film.
When we come back, we'll hear your stories and perspectives on Wonder Woman and the power of the feminine in 2017. Call 816-235-2888 to weigh in. We want to hear from women and men. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. I'm Gina Kaufman talking about the new Wonder Woman movie on KCUR's Central Standard. Now's the time when we issue a blanket spoiler alert, though we'll try to give you a heads up if we're about to reveal a major plot point. Our guests so far have been pop culture critic Loie Lockerbie and scholars Aisha K. Hardison and Viviana Grieco. Now let's hear your stories. Jenna Pell is with us. She's a singer and songwriter in Kansas City, and she's also the co-creator of a rock musical with a female lead. She's the mother of twin girls, and she's just seen Wonder Woman. Hi, Jen.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am great and so delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
What is your relationship with Wonder Woman?
Well, I am a child of the 70s as well and grew up with the Linda Carter Wonder Woman character and did my fair share of spinning around in my skirts, though they were not uniform skirts. But she was always like, she was it for me, along with Princess Leia, because there weren't very many other women to draw upon for this sort of positive, strong role model.
So you saw this movie with twin daughters, right?
Yeah, I've got 11-year-old twins. And one was a little hesitant to go. The other one was kind of gung-ho about it, partially because she actually dressed as Wonder Woman in a beautiful homemade costume that I made 3 years ago. And the conversations afterwards were really fascinating. One of the main things that we all took away and we talked about kind of ad nauseum was that throughout your life, there are going to be people who love you to pieces, but because of their own fears, will stop you in your tracks from doing what you know you're fully capable of. It happened with her mother. It happened with Steve. And
we haven't talked about her relationship with her mom yet. Can you tell us that story a little bit? Because I thought that stuff was super fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, here is this incredible island filled to the brim with incredibly strong warrior women. And her mother proactively, like, hinged her from actually training. It was her aunt who took her on as a trainee. And she had talents that were obvious and inherent from the beginning. Her mom didn't want her to fight. Her mom didn't want her to, like, actually, she actually took her to the room where all of these magical weapons are, the lasso, the sword, the shield, and said, "These are not for you." I was like, wow, that's kind of intense. But this is the mother protector, wanting to ensure that their progeny is safe. But we can't do that. And one of the things that we can do for our young women is really empower them. And that's one of the things I try to do with my daughters, partially by example and partially by giving them enough latitude to really test things out on their own.
So what questions did they have? I mean, did they?
There weren't questions so much as conversations. Well, one of the questions that they did have is, "Mommy, why are you crying during every single battle sequence?" And I did. I cried during every single battle sequence. And it was probably related to the fact that it was a woman coming from a pure place, like really embracing her power in a very sort of real, tactical, literally way. And it moved me. I didn't think I was going to cry. I had seen a bunch of friends on Facebook posts that they had, and I'm like, oh, those softies. But I really was moved from the battle on the island to the battle in no man's land. Like real fat, juicy tears. And they didn't quite understand that. They were curious about, like, the actual mythology, if there were any, like, real ties. They asked those questions. Well, yes, there's some reality in there in mythology, quote unquote. The conversations about knowing, like, your own inner truth, and being true to yourself despite the fact that others are going to try to derail you, that was the real takeaway for us. That was what stuck with them and what continues to resonate with me.
I wonder what our panelists think of this response from a couple of 11-year-olds. I mean, Viviana, does this influence at all some of your disappointment? Do you see things in maybe a different light, or no, it's not persuasive?
I appreciate the point, and I think it's an interesting point. But at the same time, I mean, on the disappointing end of the story, my daughter's reaction to Wonder Woman's mission was that, well, why does she have to fix problems made by everyone else? Why is that her role? Her unique role is to fix problems, right?
Isn't that what all superheroes do?
Yeah, but in this case, it was primarily, you know, very gender focused, at least to her view, because my daughter was like, okay, these are problems primarily made by a man, right? And here she is trying to fix all these problems made by men, and he felt that that was a narrow role for a woman. I mean, you can fix many problems, and as a superhero, I see it, but she was a little bit concerned by that sort of narrow view of the problem-solving agenda. Now, on, you know, again, on the disappointing end of things, I think that the movie also has other female characters, and I was especially disappointed by the depiction of the only one scientist as a female scientist as evil. You know, that's an opportunity to project an interesting image to a girl, my daughter, who also wants to become a scientist. And, you know, here we have a female scientist just working for evil, right? And so that also didn't sit well with me, because I understand that the movie is supposed to put the superhero at the core, and everybody else could be a prop to make her stand out. But, you know, that's an opportunity to, you know, to give a woman an interesting role, not just to be, and not just to be evil because she's a scientist. I think there's an effort at demonizing smart, dedicated women there.
I totally respect that perspective. At the same time, Loie Lockerbie, I mean, isn't there this concept of the nemesis I mean, do you think that this scientist is right? Yeah. Is maybe the nemesis of Wonder Woman, and can you really have a superhero who has no equal and opposite? Well, I mean, really, her nemesis is Ares, though, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I think what's interesting about making this villain a woman is that, and I don't know how much this stems from the original comics, although given Marston's attitude about women's superiority and so forth, you know, there's this notion of women being a pure moral force. And that comes up a little bit in the setup here of the, you know, that they're supposed to be stopping the war, they're fixing men's problems. But having one of the main villains, and we don't, I mean, we know that something terrible has happened to her because she's disfigured.
Yeah.
We don't know a lot of the backstory on that. But to have her be essentially a mass murderer working with Ares, I think that throws a little bit of a wrench into some of the gender assumptions that underlie this story.
Because right, like if men,
you know,
and women...
Because a woman is capable of this stuff, too. And you know... Diana, Wonder Woman, is really, she seems very shocked by this woman's presence in the story and her reaction to her. I found it interesting. You know, and scientists, you know, they tend to, that tampering in God's domain storyline, you know, at least goes back to Frankenstein. But I think in this case, I think it's more about just kind of throwing a wrench into some of the assumptions about men and women and about the role
and about moral
that
Wonder purity.
Woman plays. Yeah.
Well, and it truly undermines the other main points that we discussed priorly here that make the movie appealing, right? You know, about her mission, about, you know, projecting herself as someone who cannot, I mean, Wonder Woman projecting herself as someone who cannot tolerate suffering. But here, you know, we have suffering being promoted, and even suffering is being made more efficient by these female scientists.
Well, it's interesting because it seems like there's a difference maybe between making the argument that all women are like these wonderful heroic characters, and that a woman can be a wonderful heroic character, that she could also be something else.
Oh, true. True.
Let's talk to Nick in Leawood. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
What do you got to share?
So I came into this movie as generally not a fan of superhero movies. For instance, I fell asleep during The Dark Knight Rises, and I thought this was a spectacular movie and definitely the best superhero movie that I had seen. I really liked the way that it was, like, presented as a historical science fiction. I think it was made the plot more intriguing for me, as well as the way that they tied in mythology. It's just a lot more things that kept me compelled, whereas, I don't know, I couldn't tell you the full plot of, for say, The Dark Knight Rises because I fell asleep or whatever. But
so this, you thought was better than other movies you've seen in the genre?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely hands down the best superhero movie that I'd seen.
I wonder, Loie Lockerbie is our film person, and how do you think... Do you think that this movie had to rise to some kind of, had to appeal to a different audience or rise to some different standard than other movies in the genre? Or do you think this is just a personal taste thing that Nick is?
Well, there were a lot of expectations hinging on this because Wonder Woman is Wonder Woman and she's basically it. So, you know, it was a fine line that the studio had to walk, that Patty Jenkins had to walk, that everybody did. And I think the fact that it's had a very broad appeal, I mean, it's making boatloads of money. People are going to see it over and over again, men and women alike, all ages. You know, the fact that it lived up to and even surpassed a lot of those expectations, and the reviews are good too. I mean, me and most of the critics like it. So,
well, I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we have a little more time left for this conversation about Wonder Woman. If you have a story or observation we need to consider, please share it. 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we have got a panel of women talking about Wonder Woman. I'm here with Loie Lockerbie, Jenna Pell, Aisha Hardison, and Viviana Grieco. We are talking about everything from gender to nemesis to the pantheon of superhero movies and what makes Wonder Woman different. We're all over the place, but I'm finding it super interesting. I wonder, you know, part of what we've talked about is her superpowers, but we have not talked about just her personal skills. She knows a lot of languages, and that's interesting to me. It puts her in the know when other people are not, and but it also means that part of her skill is communication, which is sort of a traditionally part of what we consider often a feminine skill.
Yeah, I guess being able to verbalize and express oneself has typically been associated with women, although I think the film demonstrates the way in which that's devalued or excluded from public sphere and spaces, particularly in terms of government and bureaucracy and politics, et cetera. There are moments in which there are assumptions made about her inability, and then she proves people wrong by demonstrating her intellect and her ability to communicate.
And this conclusion that she kind of reaches, and this is maybe a bit of a spoiler alert, but I'm not going to be too specific, but it comes up again and again when she's leaving the island. Her mom tells her that the world of men does not deserve her. And this question of whether people deserve her interventions in their problems is one that's come up, whether we're talking about men specifically or people, including women, is, you know, a little unclear. But this question of what it means to save people and why you save them is interesting to me, in that she kind of reaches the conclusion that it doesn't matter whether people deserve it, and that not only that, but she's going to keep saving people, and they are very likely to keep undoing it, and that flawed as these creatures are, she's going to keep helping them. What do you think of that as a concept of what it means to save the world? That is pretty different than what it means for other superheroes I feel like I've encountered when they save the day.
Well, I mean, the conversation comes up in other superhero films and so forth of, you know, why are we doing this? Why do we bother? And, you know, very often it comes down to, well, this is what we've chosen to do, or this is who we are. So it's, you know, it's not new, really, but the fact that this is literally who she is. She didn't start out as anything else. You know, she didn't have another life before this. I think it gives her a kind of authority that somebody like, say, Iron Man, who was a reluctant hero, might not have.
Let's talk to Courtney in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Courtney.
Hey, guys.
What do you want to share?
Well, I'm actually backpedaling to discussing Dr. Maru. I found it interesting that her only successful chemical formulas were given to her by Ares, the god of war, rather than her finding them on her own.
So
she's a pawn.
Right? Yeah, yeah. She was a pawn rather than being, she was a genius, or she was billed as a genius, but the movie kind of took away from that. I found it kind of deflating that her success was given to her by a man.
Except for he couldn't do it. But he had the materials, right, but she was the only one who could figure it out and actually do it.
But I think the film also really emphasized the importance of choice, and that there is some aspect of free will. And so what you do with your skill and your talents, I think, is always up for grabs. And I think that's what the film suggests.
Yeah. Well, true. Yeah. But in any case, whether, you know, her powers are being given or whether, you know, she's a pawn, I also think that, you know, she's the one who can put it all together. And the fact, you know, Steve Trevor's mission is to steal her notebook.
Right. She's got something everyone needs.
She has something everyone. Yeah, she has something everyone needs. And whether she's organizing that knowledge in a very specific way, that's in that notebook. You know, she has the power to combine elements to make these poisons, right? And so she's the one who she has choice, and she's making that decision, right?
Yeah. And is power really power if you don't have the power for good or evil?
That's a big question.
Big existential discussion.
Yeah.
Well, Courtney, did you like the movie? I mean, that's a fair criticism you're offering. I'm wondering if you're about your overall review.
I loved it. I've seen it twice. I took my 5-year-old son to see it, and I saw it with a bunch of friends a second time. So I did. I cried during every battle scene. I loved it. It was just that one little piece stuck with me a little bit. If I had any criticism, that would probably be it. But I found that interesting, kind of pertinent to the conversation.
As far as taking your 5-year-old son, we've heard from people talking about what it meant to them to take their daughters. What did it mean to you to take your son?
Oh, Wonder Woman is his favorite. He actually dresses up as Wonder Woman frequently. So it was actually very special for him. Seeing the movie through his eyes was amazing because he thought she was real. And I'm a single mom too. So seeing this strong woman on screen kind of saving the world was really important to me to watch him.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting discussion I've seen emerging around this movie, especially the all-women screenings on opening night. Just the question of, is this movie, who is the movie for? And this is something, I mean, it seems like part of the power culturally of male superheroes is that women and men have been influenced by seeing men in that role. And so what does it say if people think of a woman in this role as particularly intended for a female audience?
I'd say it's about time. I mean, to some degree it is, because we don't have these cultural images the way men do. But the fact that it also appeals to men, I think, is very meaningful and a very positive thing. So,
and I would also say that, like, especially with the most recent, like, batch of Star Wars movies, starting with Rey and of course, like, my brain is going to go blank, but going from, like, not having the action figures and that kind of stuff available to having, like, a broad spectrum of strong female, I know that it's stuff that we don't really need, but, like, having this stuff available for our kids is imperative so that they can see that it's valued as much as any other item that might be available for us to waste our money on.
Yeah, and I was just going to add that I think it's important for women to see it. We've been waiting for it. We want to support it. But it's important for men to see it, too. It's important for little boys to see it as much as little girls to see it. They need to know that their mothers can be strong women, etc., but that these women exist. They are real, right? And I think that's important also.
When we talk about, I mean, so many people have said that they cried during every battle scene. And I'll admit, I was crying in that theater. I'm not totally clear on why. And I wonder if you guys have theories about that. Why are we crying during these battle scenes? I mean, do we usually do that? I don't think I usually cry during battle scenes.
I think for me, like, it was one of those moments where it was like this, and anything and everything that possibly, like, felt like it had kind of pushed me down or held me back was on the giant screen being obliterated. It was a very visceral experience, and I really truly didn't expect it to happen, and I did not cry during any other of the millions of war movies that I've watched. I'll take it back. That last Star Wars movie, I just knew that they were all going to die, I just started bawling. But that's really the only other battle I can think of.
Man. Okay, well, our time is up, but keep talking to us about Wonder Woman on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. If you have, like, a really cool Wonder Woman tattoo or something like that and you want to share a picture of it, you can do that. We wouldn't mind seeing it. Anyway, Loie Lockerbie, Jenna Pell, Aisha K. Hardison, and Viviana Grieco, thank you all so much for coming in and talking to us about Wonder Woman this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen back to this conversation at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. Tomorrow, have you ever wondered how we ever came up with that Amber Alert system where everyone's phone buzzes in unison and a basic description of a missing person is circulated immediately? How did we get to that from that picture on a milk carton, and which works better? Tune in and find out. Tomorrow's show is at 10, as always. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Todd Hope, and Suzanne Hogan. Danielle Hogarty is our intern. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to date is next.